Welcome, Black Swan team. Glad everybody's here. We are right at the top of the hour, noon Eastern. And as you know, and as our participants that are logging on know, today is the 5-year anniversary of Never Split the Difference, which is why we are here. Very exciting day, 5-year mark. A lot of good stuff going on, and so as you can see, we got some of the core pieces of our team here together, including the acclaimed author and proud to say my father, Chris Voss. We also got Troy Smith, Derek Gaunt, and Sandy Hine on, who you will get to hear from in a second as we kind of introduce ourselves. Before we get into introductions, just real quick for you, Professor Voss. You got this thing going on. You got this Black Swan business thing that's doing pretty well. You got, you know, the Chris Voss personal brand and Never Split the Difference that's obviously doing pretty well. And so just order of operations, you know, what was your vision, right? Did you want to do the business first, or did you want to do the book first, or did you want them to feed each other? What was the vision around creating the business and the book? What was the motivation? Where did it come from?
Yeah, you know, you and I started training, teaching business negotiation right after I left the Bureau. I mean, I got a gig teaching at Harvard. You helped me teach at Harvard. Then, you know, you were there the entire time when we were teaching at Georgetown, sounding board, creating contact, principally because you and I had been doing this together for a long time. I mean, you started picking this stuff up when you were a little kid. You started picking this stuff up when you needed to get yourself out of trouble in high school. You know, I didn't know you were using the accusations audits way back then to keep yourself out of detention. But, you know, as you and I were doing this, and Derek was there from the early days, too. I mean, as you know, we started collaborating with Derek like 2001, 2002. Derek was always there. You know, and I thought we were going to put a book out. I thought we were going to start training companies. And then in that process, you know, I realized that I didn't really want to train Chinese executives because they like Derek so much more than they like me. You know, they ostracized me. They love Derek, and then they love Sandy. You know, but then I thought, you know, we'd be training companies. I didn't really know how much we would turn to training high performance people, the top 1%, the people that either are going to make a difference in the world or are going to. And that's been a real surprise to me. And that's been the cool thing about the team that we have assembled. And, you know, nobody's doing it. Nobody's doing what we're doing. I mean, I'll ramble a little bit. What we're doing is so unusual as a team that I know Davey told you this. Davey Johnson, our director of business development, she thought that the job that she was interviewing for was like she was being punked. Like nobody actually had a company that did this stuff because she never heard of anything like it in the entire world. And, you know, I mean, I guess anybody that doesn't want to negotiate like a black swan, anybody that doesn't want to learn the black swan method, is going to be left out. They're going to get punked because the people that we're teaching are changing the world. I didn't really envision how much we would help those who are changing the world.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very true statement. And it's something I had forgotten about, which is also pretty cool. And Davey's been an integral part of our team as well. So as people are trickling in here, right, we're gearing up for a Q&A session. In celebration of the 5-year anniversary of the Black Swan Group. And we're getting a little background from Chris Voss himself on the book and the company and kind of how it all came together. And to your point, Professor, I refer to Chris as Professor quite often, right? It's a very fitting title for him for obvious reasons. But to your point, I mean, we hit another level with every single person that we've added, right? When it was you and I, we're kind of running around like chickens with our heads cut off. We don't really know which way is up. It's just like, all right, we got to create a revenue stream. We got this thing where we know we can teach people and help make them better. And so we're throwing stuff at the wall and see if it sticks. And the reality is, I mean, we really hit another level, another gear, another rate of speed that we hadn't even imagined as we started adding people. And Derek was kind of one of the first people that we added, right? Working with us from the early days. So Derek, in a minute, I'd love you to introduce yourself, get a little background on you. For those of you that don't know, Derek Gaunt is the author of Ego, Authority, Failure, which has been a great companion book to a Never Split the Difference. You can see it. Professor Voss has it there, ready to go. If you haven't had a chance to pick it up, the premise behind it is it takes everything we talk about skill-wise, tactical empathy-wise, in Never Split the Difference, and applies it directly to the leadership position. It gets very, very specific on, as a leader, how do you execute better? Even if you're thinking about being a leader, what do you need to know in order to be the best that you can be? So we love the book. We've gotten a lot out of it. And with that, Dr. Gaunt, tell the people who you are, if you would, please.
All right. So he calls me doctor. I ain't no doctor.
Did you ever play one on TV?
No, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. So I started my law enforcement career in 88, became a hostage negotiator in 97, team leader 2001, team commander in 2004. And that's a position I held up until the time that I left. It was a small municipality just across the river from Washington, D.C. Chris, at the time, had moved from New York to D.C., he took up a position at the Ivory Tower, known as the Crisis Negotiation Unit at the FBI Academy facility down at Quantico. And that's when we met, back in 2000, 2001, somewhere thereabouts. Introduced by a mutual friend. And the rest, as they say, is history. He obviously has a big brain. He obviously had a lot of things that going for him that I could borrow, steal, or learn from. And when he put this thing together in 2007, 2008, he asked me to join them. And the rest, as they say, is history. We've never looked back. Since being with the group, it's provided me the opportunity to travel all over the globe preaching the gospel of the Black Swan Group, both organizations and individuals. And met a lot of really cool people. Got a lot of really cool ideas that have been able to help us evolve this material. That's the great thing about being a part of this group is that we're not resting. We're not sitting on our laurels. We're, you know, I was telling Chris about this the other day that, you know, I wake up, sit bolt upright at 2:30 in the morning and say to myself, I can put this in this block of instruction, or I can change this block of instruction. And so the only reason I bring that up is because the people that you see or hear on the screen right now live, eat, and breathe this stuff. And because we're so passionate about it, we're going to continue to evolve it and maintain our position as the leaders in this field. You got
Derek,
a lot. Derek
from Sandy, you got some static that was coming through there just real briefly.
Test.
When you were speaking, all right. I think it's gone now. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Little hiccup in the interwebs. No big deal. So you may have missed Chris mentioning that, you know, going to Germany to teach the Chinese Development Bank wasn't necessarily something he wanted to do, but fortunately, it was a great gig for us in the early days, and Chris got to go and share his knowledge, which, by the way, wrapping your mind around, teaching the Chinese in Germany, right, that in itself is kind of an odd situation, right, all on its own. But it was a great gig for us, and a good friend and partner that we had at the time, who I will go unnamed because I don't have his permission to mention it, but we had a great relationship with him, and he reached out one time for a gig and Chris wasn't available, right? And I wasn't teaching at the time, but we know that Derek is a power hitter, right? He can come in, he can back clean up anytime. So we called Derek up. We say, well, look, we're sending you to Germany. You're going to teach for the Chinese Development Bank in Germany. And you want to talk about getting thrown in with both feet, like that, like with no real lead up, right? No large amount of clarity on execution or sequencing, just go and get it done, which happens to be a little bit of the black swan way, right? I personally like to say, if you're going to swim in the black swan pool, you're going to swallow some water in the process, right? That's part of learning how to swim with us. And he went out there and he killed it. And then when we brought Sandy on, who will introduce herself next, she started going out to Germany and teaching with the Chinese Development Bank and crushing it as well. So much so that then Derek and Sandy became in demand, right? It's like, hey, we got another gig in Germany with Chinese Development Bank. Can we have Derek or Sandy, right? Would that be possible? Which I
was third on the way.
Yeah, right. It got bumped to third real fast. But the thing that still cracks me up is Derek pulling Chris aside after coming back from Germany on one of these trips and asking him specifically, how do you keep up with these guys at dinner, right? When you guys go out and celebrate and you're partying and you're drinking, how do you keep up with these guys? And what was your response to that, Chris, at the time? What ended up happening there?
They never invited me to dinner.
Poor guy. That has been an internal joke for us. That both Sandy and Derek go out and they kill it. I mean, absolutely crush it, that they got to have them out to dinner. And so, Sandy, I know you had to deal with that too. If you could please, you know, introduce yourself, a little bit of background on you. And then if you want to throw in anything about your Chinese Development Bank experience, feel free.
Okay, so I did 23 years in Alexandria Police Department. I actually worked with Derek. He was the commander of the team that I was on. Learned everything I know basically from him, and actually went and helped him teach at the local academy for a little while before I retired. I started on the team in 2000, probably about the same time he was meeting Chris, and I left in 2012 when I retired. And I hung out with you guys at Georgetown for a little while, did a couple little things on the side, did a trip to Dallas, just kind of bounced in and out of the Black Swan world for a number of years. And then started getting calls from Derek 4 or 5 years ago. When you coming on? When you coming on? The work's there now. We need you. When you coming on? And I said, my daughter's got to graduate college first. You got to have to wait. I'm paying for college. You got to wait. So her senior year, Derek calls and he said, Chris is going to call you. He's going to be calling you anytime now. You better be ready to come on. So next thing I know, Chris is calling. And I said, all right, I'll come on at the end of the school year. And then COVID happened. So the end of the school year was a little sooner than we even thought. So kind of started listening in and catching up on things probably March or April, and then came on officially full time in July. And I'm loving it. It's probably the best job you could have in the entire world, because creatively, you know, they've let me go in so many different directions. We have the Women's Power Hour now that we're doing. We have the Empowering Women to Influence that's coming up now. And so, you know, they've really just said, here you go. You know, like Derek said, here's the deep end. You dive in and swim and you're good. You just go. So I'm absolutely loving it. There couldn't be a better job in the world where I get to come here and do something that I absolutely loved. When I left the police department, negotiations was the thing I missed more than anything else. I missed my team. And so now I feel like I have my team back and, you know, got my commander in place still, my mentor, so to speak. And I'm absolutely enjoying it. And it was Derek, he got dropped into Germany and then he came to me and said, I can't go. I've talked to Chris. Will you go? And I said, what? You want me to do what? He said, yeah, here you go. He dropped a notebook in my lap and said, this is what you have to teach. And I was like, oh my God, this is all business stuff. I don't even understand this. What does this word even mean? So yeah, I spent the entire plane ride over and the entire time the night before, because the sleeping was all messed up, literally going through everything and like trying to cram my brain full of stuff so that when I went in there, I wouldn't sound like a complete idiot, right? And they do take you out to dinner. And it was funny because probably the day before I left, Derek comes to my house and he brings me this plug so I can use the electronics over there. Here, you need this plug, the international plug. And I was like, okay. And he said, by the way, when you go out to dinner with these people, keep your glass close. And the first thing you need to do when you sit down is ask for a large bottle of water, because they are going to just keep giving you alcohol. They're going to just keep giving it to you, and you have to be careful. And I was like, okay. Not only that, you didn't tell me the part about how they literally have this lazy Susan on the table and they're just dumping all this food on your plate and you have no idea what it is. It's just like, what is this? I don't know what this is. So the translator, luckily they can't hear me saying, oh my God, what is that? And the translator's there telling me this is that. And it's all very different and new. But even though I guarded my cup, you get pulled away from, I don't know if you had this experience. Well, I know you did, because they called you Denzel Washington over there. I don't know what they ever called me, but they kept pulling me away from the table. Take a picture with me. And I was like, okay, my comeback and my glass is full. I'm like, I'm going to start carrying the damn glass with me. But I had to, and we didn't do it on Friday night either. We did it on Thursday night. So I had to be back on Friday because they were leaving early Friday. They did their celebratory dinner Thursday night, which meant I had to go back on Friday to do their final exercise. And I was hungover like nobody's business. But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, obviously, for those watching, right, it's Derek and Sandy are big hits wherever they go. And Troy, we'll get to you next year. And I know we're doing some Q&A here, right? That's the point of today. And so, Sandy, while I'm with you, while we're with you, I know that you're an avid reader, right? Like you engulf books. And so we actually got a question about, like, you know, what books influenced you the most? I think you'd be great to answer this. You know, as you were gearing up to work with us, what books did you lean on, or what are you reading these days, or what helped you get through Chinese Development Bank? Like, what are you reading these days that's highly influential, especially in regards to execution and tactical empathy?
I have so many books going right now, and Chris is an avid reader also. And so he's always dropping stuff in. And so I'm somebody who has a Kindle, and I read 6 or 7 books at a time. So as soon as he mentions something, I go and get the book, and then I start reading that. And then I bounce back and forth all these different books. But I love Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow. I love Talent Code and Culture Code. Of course, Ego, Authority, Failure and Never Split the Difference, of course, have to be right there at the top. And then there's several new ones that I've started that are escaping me right now, because like I said, I have 7 or 8 going all at one time. But Chris is really, really good about finding a new book with a new, a new concept that he wants us to look at and kind of dropping it in. And I immediately start reading that book. And it's amazing how much neuroscience is really tying into what we're doing. So any books that I can get on the neuroscience, is really helping me accelerate what I understand about the whole process and the whole psychological aspect of it, along with that neuroscience coming in. And it's overwhelming how well all the stuff that you and Chris did in the book really relates. And when you look at the neuroscience and you look at the psychology, it backs it all up, and it just proves that you were right on point from the very start, and that's a great book to start off with and realize that the neuroscience and the psychology all backs it up now. So it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And so a couple more I'll throw in there. So Beyond Winning, Robert Mnookin, chapter 2 is one we actually lean on quite often. The name of that chapter is called The Tension Between Empathy and Assertiveness. The whole book is great, but chapter 2 is something really, really to focus on. Getting More, Stuart Diamond, if you guys haven't picked that up. Obviously, Start With No, Jim Camp, which we reference in the book. Something that we've actually been reading lately, Nonviolent Communication, who's the author, I can't remember off the top of my head, and it's on my bookshelf, I got it over here to my left. That's another one. Nonviolent Communication, personally, there you go, there it is. I really like the book, the premise,
and Marshall, the intention. Marshall Rosenberg.
Marshall Rosenberg, thank you. Yeah, Marshall Rosenberg, Nonviolent Communication. I would not put a whole lot into the execution as far as, because they talk a lot about I statements or starting phrases with I think this and how I see it is this way for these reasons, right? Using I statements to really make your point. And so execution-wise, I wouldn't lean really hard on that, but the theory behind the effect or the emotion that they're trying to create behind the communication, I think is very much in line with what we talk about. And so Troy, before we get to you, just real quick from you, professor, on the neuroscience, that we've been focusing on lately? What reads, what should people be paying attention to?
Yeah, I'll mention that and maybe talk a little bit about a sequence of reading too. Because a lot of what we're talking about these days, it's a martial arts concept called Shu, Ha, and Ri. And Shu is your baseline, how you're building your real solid base, the real understanding of the core principles. Ha is when you're beginning to look around at other masters. You've got the core principles. And Ri is when you're really taking it to the next level. Establish your baseline with never split the difference and start with no. And then Mnuchin's chapter on empathy, the tension between empathy and assertiveness. Start your baseline there. You begin to develop a little bit more. Stuart Diamond, getting more. You know, Brandon, I think, you know, your appreciation for Stuart Diamond's book of Getting More is because you got such a solid base and a solid foundation to work from.
Mm.
Now, nonviolent communication, you know, that's a little bit higher level book to be able to sort some of that stuff out.
Yes.
You know, that's almost at the top level. You can start looking at some of the neuroscience in Ha a little bit to understand the mid-level, to begin to understand how some of these mechanisms actually work. But that's a line between Ha and Ri also. I mean, nonviolent communication, if you want to understand, take a deep dive into I messages. Or the flip side is, because there's a three-part structure to I messages, there's really a bit of a three-part structure to summary also. What happened in the past, how people reacted to it, what they think the implications are for the future. It's kind of a three-part summary. So that's a little bit higher level. You got to have never split the difference. Start with no, and Mnuchin's chapter as your baseline to really begin to take this deeper dive stuff. Because you're going to be confused by it otherwise. Take Sandy's N9 class. One of the cool things about bringing Sandy onto the team is she got a great class on the negotiation 9 skills. Now, your original question to me. Neuroscience. One of the things that I'm interested in now, besides listening to all of Andrew Huberman's podcasts, neuroscientist out of Stanford University, brilliant stuff, really interesting cat. He's on Instagram. He's got his own podcast. He got interviewed twice by Lewis Howes. The Lewis Howes interviews are great. Huberman actually recommended a book called The Molecule of More, which is all about dopamine. And dopamine is the anticipation molecule, what's going to happen in the future. It's about either your excitement about the future or your desire to control it based on your dread of the future. You know, one of the things that I'm learning as a side note from understanding dopamine, like the Trump chemical for dopamine is oxytocin, which is the bonding drug, which is a here and now chemical. When you feel bonded, like bonded deeply in ways nobody understands to somebody else. And that's the that's right moment. We backed into that, you know, getting a that's right out of somebody as a result of a summary. Is the life-changing moment in people's lives. And that's what we really focus on and never split the difference. I mean, a story on you, man. When I got a that's right out of you, when you wouldn't play off any blocks, you know, so we get to tell a story on you now. We told stories on Derek and Sandy, and we're going to get to Troy pretty soon also. But all right, so And this book, I'm not sure that we entirely illuminate this story in the book, but Brandon played football. You know, he's not a tiny human being. And, he was a lineman. You know, and linemen, they ain't nothing makes a lineman happier than to run head first into something. They're like mountain goats. They crash into each other. They hit each other really hard. And then they kind of drool and go back to the huddle, and then they do it again. And, you know, I used to think, and being a lineman is a complex thing too. Like, I was a back. I didn't want to get dirty. I was a quarterback. The lineman's job is to make sure that I didn't get dirty. I didn't realize how complicated that job was. So then they switch Brandon in, he's playing, getting ready to play college ball. He's playing prep school. they switch him to middle linebacker. Now, the middle linebacker's job is a little bit different. Like, the middle linebacker ain't supposed to, he's only supposed to hit one thing. Whatever human being is carrying the ball. That's the only person a middle linebacker is supposed to make contact with. He's supposed to get out of the way of the linemen that are trying to hit him. Now, Brandon thinks this is an unmanly thing. To get out of the way of somebody who's trying to hit him, you know, that's unmanly. And, you know, me and his coach are trying to get him what's called playing off blocks. You got to dodge a block. You got to push the guy away. You know, you got to act like the guy's humidity or something. You're like, oh, I don't want to touch that. Don't want to touch that. And Brandon won't do it. He's hitting everything on the field. Like, somebody, he's going out of his way to hit people. If they're not close to him, he'll run over and hit them. He doesn't care. And I'm yelling at him. The coach is yelling at him, you know, start playing off blocks. And every time we tell him that, he'd look us in the eye and say, you're right, which is code for shut up. I'm going to do whatever I want to do. Just stop talking to me. And I'm trying to think, like, what is wrong with this kid? Like, what, why won't he do this? So one day I realized I got to get a that's right out of him. And I look him in the eye and I go, and it's got to be an emotional. I go, you think it's unmanly to get out of the way of somebody who's trying to hit you? You think it's a cowardly thing to do? And he kind of looks down and goes, that's right. And he started getting out of the way the next day. The very next time he stepped on the field, he started doing it right.
You know, and what I love most about that story is it's so telling about mindset going into any situation, whether it's sports or negotiation or what have you. And I very much came from a school of thought where your job is to destroy whatever is in front of you. Destroy it. And then I get moved to a position where I got different responsibilities, right? Like being in a new industry, being in a new seat within a company. I got very different responsibilities in my new seat, but I've carried my old school of thought with me. And it hindered my success. And I needed to get that's right, right? I need to say that's right to somebody for the right reasons in order to get around that. And I think that very much plays into what we struggle mentally with in negotiation, right? We've come from a school of thought of negotiating with leverage, making sure that your points are solid, making sure that your data is good, right? You can always fall back on your data and justifications. And then here comes Black Swan with this tactical empathy approach that's like, no, you can kind of forget about that stuff and just focus on verbalizing understanding. And everything else will fall into place. And it's very much in line with kind of the mental struggle that I went through changing positions, right? And that's one of the things I love about that story. So on that note, Troy, I'll go to you. So I'm going to do a little bit of round robin here. I got a question for you, Troy, along with your introduction. And then I'll go to Derek and then Pat, you, Professor. And then I got a question for you, Sandy, as well. So Troy, right, we haven't heard from you yet. So if you give a quick background, kind of who you are, where you're from, and do not be confused. When we added Troy, we hit another level as well, just like every other person we've added to this team. And then if you could put a nice bow on it by letting everybody know, how do we best practice tactical empathy in our daily lives, right? We got a question around, and I think this actually came on from LinkedIn before today, right, as a pre-question. How do we practice in our daily lives outside of work? So who are you? How do we practice outside of work, man?
All right. Thank you. I'm glad to be here, first of all. I've been with SAPD. I retired from SAPD, San Antonio Police Department. I started in 1988, also like Derek. I did 23 years like Sandy. And 7 of those years, I was assigned to a full-time hostage negotiations unit where we were averaging anywhere from 300 to 400 call-ups a year. I've been involved in over 300, well, I mean, not 300 to 400 call-ups over my lifetime, over career over there. I've been involved in over 300 call-ups. I actually was a negotiator on 278 of those call-ups. And during that time, in 2000, I got a chance to go to the FBI Academy two-week school, and that's where I met Chris. And the coolest thing I remembered about Chris right off the bat was he had a boat. And so he says, hey, you want to see my boat? And we go out there and have a good time. And no sooner do I get back to San Antonio, the very next day we have an international call-up. So I get a chance to call up, talk to the whole team again, just like, you know, never missed a beat. I retired. Well, after that, I went undercover, and I was able to use the negotiation skills in my interviewing techniques. I retired, went into the private sector for a while, and then I started getting these emails and newsletters from the Black Swan Group, and I started reading them. I'm like, Chris Voss, man, he's putting out newsletters. Brandon, they're putting out some kind of newsletter. So I started getting excited about it because I never thought that we would use these skills outside of our law enforcement world. After we became negotiators, when we were done, we were done. Then I get a call saying, hey, would you be interested in being part of the group? And like a kid in a candy store, I got all excited. My wife, what's going on? I said, you know, I'm going to be able to use my negotiation skills again, you know, because they weren't working on her. She already knew. So I needed to get back out in the field, you know. So they said, hey, would you be interested in being part of the team? And in September and October, I came on the team. And I tell you what, it's one of the best teams I've ever been a part of. Because just like everybody said before me, you have a lot of latitude, a lot of freedom, and it's always fluid. They're always learning something new. We're always reading. We're always putting out something, and we're always gaining something every time we talk to a client or a group. And so it's a two-way learning process, and we love that. You know, just like they said, every last one of us, we live this stuff. I tell a little story about last week we were talking, and I made a little joke about, hey, we need to get a hold of Chelsea because my wife wants to get on my calendar. And then I look up and she's on my calendar. And my wife thought that was the funniest thing. And that made her actually enjoy being a part of the Black Swan Group even more because it made her feel included. So we love that. Talking about tactical empathy in your everyday life, one of the things you have to do is, you know, be curious, man. If you're curious and you're always looking for the why, it's going to cause you to be more engaging with the individual that you're dealing with. They're going to think you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. So be curious. If you're curious, people are going to say, wow, this person is one of the best listeners I've ever dealt with. They're going to start to like you. And the more they like you, the easier it's going to become. And that'll be part of your everyday life once you start doing it. And you start realizing that it's who you are now. It won't be a chore. It won't be a challenge. It'll just be part of who you are.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Troy. And something I'll just to piggyback on the end of that. Every conversation you have, every single conversation you have, there isn't one interaction you're going to have that is outside of the realm of possibility for practice to get reps in. So outside of work, anytime you interact with another person. And then something else I add to it, a mental piece around curiosity. You got to flip your brain into a place where you are ready to verbalize understanding, right? If mentally it's too taxing to get to a place where like, all right, I'm just going to verbalize understanding here. That's all I'm going to do, right? Which is really hard to do when we're already triggered or we're tired. It's the end of the day. We already got a lot of things on our mind. We just want to have the conversation, not put a lot of effort into it and move on to the next thing, right? That happens to all of us. It's human nature. We all get bogged down. We all get fatigued. And in those moments, that's when it's that much more important to focus on actually being curious. And the reality is, this is going to be a harsh statement. If you're in a place where you don't want to mentally click into gear to perform at that level, you're going to continue to have conversations that don't get you anywhere. Right. We talked about this last week. We're still in the same spot. Did you verbalize an in-depth understanding in the last conversation? The answer to that is no. Then that's where the rubber meets the road, as it were. And so, yeah, it is, especially when you're just starting out and it isn't muscle memory. Right. You're in a shoe. Right. You're learning the basics. You're just getting off the ground. You're going to have to mentally switch your focus to a verbal understanding and genuine curiosity. And that feels like a very big step sometimes, right? For all the reasons I mentioned earlier. But that's perfect, Troy. And if you haven't heard this, I always suggest call up your most expensive utility and get a discount. It's a great way to practice where you got low stakes, but getting a win is going to be a big deal for you. That's an easy one to start practicing with. So continuing with our questions, kind of going around here. Derek, I'd love to throw this to you. Someone asked specifically. Hey, Brian,
please hold on to that challenge for Derek for a second because you just gave me a bit of inspiration.
Sure. Yeah. Professor, if you got a thought, please feel free.
All right. So, you know, unofficially, today is International Tactical Empathy Day. And there's no shortage of stuff raging on social media as we speak. You know, whether it be American politics, whether it be international politics. You know, the Israeli-Palestinian thing is raging right now. It's raging so much, it's actually catching the attention of the American media, and the American media only really wants to pay attention to when we're tearing each other apart because they love the rock throwing and they love the flame throwing that's going on. But, you know, whichever one of these issues you feel most passionate about, here's what I challenge you to do just today, just for today. You only got to do it today. You don't got to live this way. But International Tactical Empathy Day, find somebody's position on social media that you disagree with and wade into the conversation like this. Before I disagree with you, let me make sure I've got your perspective correct. And then with the curiosity that Brandon and Derek are talking, or Brandon and Troy are talking about now, try and lay out their perspective until either you can't take it no more and you just quit, or until they tell you you've got it right. Until they say, that's right. You've got my perspective correctly. And keep it up until the one you're arguing with confirms whether that's right or an agreement that you got it right. Now, this is likely going to be really hard and maybe even exhausting for you the first couple times you try it. So you can go back to your arguments tomorrow. But today, just for today, let's see how much of this tactical empathy madness we can inject into the raging that's going on in social media. See what happens. You want some practice where you got nothing at stake? Try it today. Just try it today.
Now, that's a great ad, and that's actually not a bad segue into the question I wanted to throw at you. So this comes from, looks like Guy threw this in. And he says, you know, what would you point out as the negotiations held within public administration, be they national, international? How would you apply the BSG principles there? And I think that's a good piggyback right off of what you said.
Yeah, you know, what you're trying, before you throw your stuff in, you know, try to get where they're coming from right. Now, here's what's really going to happen when you do that. If you disagree, by definition, you probably got some negative emotions that are getting triggered. And trying to level out the other side is going to level you out first. It'll clear your head before it'll clear their head, and it's going to clear their head. So you get more dialed in to what the problem actually is. So, you know, how do you apply BSG principles, the black swan method, to be a black swan? It's the same way as it is one-on-one. Curious, as Troy was just talking about, making a genuine effort to demonstrate understanding to the other side. Now, it's besides leveling you out, it's going to soften them up for your perspective. So whether or not you're starting your phraseology with, it feels like this is your perspective. Based on what you're telling me, here's how you feel because these things happen. And because these things happened, it's going to cause these things to happen in the future. You know, however you fumble with it, whether you're doing it when you get a chance to speak. Now, when you get a chance to speak in a public section, you're going to be dying to give your perspective. You're going to have been sitting back there listening, and they're going to be saying stuff that every time some of what you feel is inaccurate comes out of their mouths, it's going to set you off. You know, those are those negative emotions that are sending you down the path of righteous indignation. You know, righteous indignation feels so good. It is such a bad drug. It's so good. That's why it's a drug. I mean, it sends you down a bad path. So just today, same thing. It would be one-on-one with your family members. Before I disagree, here's what your perspective is. I mean, dive in, attempt on a summary right off the bat. It's going to be hard, which is what makes it that much more valuable.
Yeah, I think that's great. To put it plainly, right? Coming at it with a summary, right? Obviously, it depends on the circumstance, right? But going into a situation, knowing that there's things about what's happening in the mind of the people on the other side, starting with a verbalization of what those things are. And then the second part of this, and this goes back to how we're wired. Like when I was an offensive lineman and I'm wired to destroy everything that's in front of me, somewhat because we're all, yes, addicted, we're somewhat wired to want to lay out a verbalization and then have the other side tell us how right we are. When it comes to curiosity, when it comes to the intention being to understand more, essentially what you got to be ready for is the correction. If anything, you should be expecting it. So far, you've indicated your position to be. And if they go, no, that's not it at all. The answer for us, right, the executor, the primary, isn't, oh, my God, that didn't work, which we all fall into, right? I laid a label out, and they didn't say back to me exactly what I thought they would say, and so the skill didn't work. And what happens in that moment is our brain shut off, and we stop absorbing the information in the moment. And if someone has cut you off to correct your statement or whatever you verbalized, you're actually in a wonderful spot. Because that's when they're going to reveal the black swan. That's when they're going to reveal the deep-rooted emotion that's tied to their past or to their own personal story that feeds this position. And unless we have a good understanding of those underlying motives, we're never going to be able to come to a place where we can collaborate well. And so when you verbalize, get ready for the correction. In fact, expect it. Because if they come back and go, that's right, that's exactly what it was, then you're golden. And if they come back and say, no, that's not it at all, instead of mentally shutting down in the moment because we're convinced the skill didn't work, our ears, our eyes, and our mind are open to the things that we haven't figured out or fully understand yet because they're getting ready to tell us. And the worst thing we can do is close ourselves off to the information because we feel embarrassed or caught off guard, right? Never use embarrassment or getting caught off guard as a reason to close our ears off. So I love that great thought there, Professor. And so, Sandy, actually, I'll go to you next because another question that came from has been coming in is actually comes from a female, a woman who has taken a new position. And she has mentioned that when she uses, well, first of all, start like this. She's been accused of saying, I'm sorry too much. And more specifically, she's been accused of saying, I'm sorry, when she uses no oriented questions, right? She says labels, mirrors, right? Some of the other stuff seems to work well. But every time I use a no oriented question, someone says, don't apologize. You apologize too much. And so being that this is a woman that's taking a new position and you are essentially head of our department as far as getting women acclimated and giving them a new perspective to look at things from, what would you say to her? What advice would you give her in the same circumstance that she's in?
Huh. It kind of depends. That's our sort of patented answer. But as a female, sometimes things that you say might be confused with apologies. You said no oriented questions. People are telling you you're apologizing too much. Be mindful of how you phrase things and be mindful of your tone. If you are too soft, you're going to come off as too emotional. If you're too assertive, you're going to come off as too harsh and you're going to get that label. It's really a fine line that a woman has to walk to be kind of considered in the right place by a lot of different people.
And I'm going to jump in just to add some clarity to the question, because this was something that I missed when I threw it out there.
Okay.
The other thing she mentioned is she's getting this feedback from other female coworkers. So when she's in a workplace and she uses no oriented questions, she's got other female coworkers that come to her, and the feedback she gets is, don't apologize. You apologize too much. Quit apologizing. And so how does she balance that, especially where the feedback is coming from?
I got 2 cents to throw in after Sandy gets done too.
Sure.
Okay. Women are the harshest critics of other women. And if I've learned nothing from this power hour, I found out that while women are always worried about dealing with assertive men at the workplace, it's other assertive women that are probably more dangerous. A lot of women have the mindset that they have to go in and be tough, and they have to, you know, take no prisoners and go in there and stomp all over the place, or they're going to be seen as too weak. So when they have a woman who doesn't feel the need to do that because they can express things with their words and they can use the black swan techniques and they can use tactical empathy, they get looked down upon because these other women haven't found the secret yet. When you use tactical empathy, it puts you in a place where you're not going to come off too emotional. You're not going to come off too assertive. You're going to come off as just this kind of regulated person. And it's really hard to explain how that feels until, like Derek says, go out and road test it, because you'll see, and you'll see that your biggest critics that you're around are going to be other women, because the mindset that a woman has going into the workplace is that they have to be this tough brick wall and that they can't really be a real human being. And you find by using these skills that you have a lot more power than you think you have just by using the tactical empathy. Don't let those other women get to you. Label the dynamic that you see. It seems like you have a problem with the way I act. Let them tell you something else. There's something else going on there. It really has nothing to do with you for the most part. It's probably to do more on their end. And they don't really understand how you're being so successful and you're not being assertive or harsh like they are. So talk to them, label that dynamic, pull them in with you, and, you know, give them a little black swan technique, you know, teaching there, and let them know what you're doing and let them see how it's working for you. But just be aware that most women are harsh toward other women, especially women that have found the secret of tactical empathy, because these other women haven't found it yet. They can't find their niche. They don't know where they fit in. So they take it out on you instead of trying to figure out what's going on. And you can figure out where they're getting pressure from and what's happening on their side by labeling that dynamic to get more information from them.
Yeah, and Professor, you can definitely jump in here in a minute, and I would just add one thing. You know, I don't think that this is just a woman-to-woman dynamic in the workplace, right? That tends to be the subject matter of our question here, but I think this applies, what you said, Sandy, applies anytime you're someone that's getting heat in the workplace, whether from the lateral piece or from above, applying exactly what Sandy is just talking about, right? People are going to be so thrown off by your ability to execute empathy well that it might sound like an apology to them when you're actually doing a really good job asking a no-oriented question. And so the interaction that takes place between you and that individual has to be handled, and it's got to be handled very similar to exactly what Sandy just laid out. So, Professor, I'll throw it to you here, sir. I know you got some thoughts you want to throw in.
Yeah, really, to succeed, you got to be willing to be different, and, you know, the middle of the bell curve, if you will, where 80% of the people are. You're gonna scare them. I mean, they're gonna tell you you're doing it wrong. They're gonna if they're in the middle of the bell curve, and 80% of them are, when you're doing something different, you know, their gut check is, oh my God, you can't succeed doing something different than me because that means I'm doing something wrong and I can't deal with that. You know, to be a top performer is to be different. And initially it's scary and it's frightening. And then it starts to be fun. And the particular fun for women, I continue to love to discover the fun for women. Like I have gotten asked, and I'm sure the others have too, no shortage of time, can I use this stuff for picking up women? You know, so guys asking me, can they use the mirrors and labels and empathy for women? And finally, I get feedback just a couple of days ago from a woman who's using labels and mirrors on the guys that are hitting on her. So she can sort them out and decide who she likes and who she doesn't like. And she's just killing it. And so she has started using the mirrors and the labels with guys she doesn't particularly want to go out with just to see what happens. You know, your small stakes practice. And I'm hearing that these guys are confessing their love to her and she thought they were players. And now all of a sudden they're just killing themselves for her attention. And she's just gotten massively empowered by this stuff. So, fellas, watch out because women are picking this up.
That's right. That's right. All right. So, Dr. Gaunt, we finally worked our way back to you. I actually got kind of two-part question for you. The first part came directly for you. You know, what was the toughest negotiation that you were in law enforcement? And so I'm going to ask, you know, as best you can, if you could draw the parallels between that difficult negotiation and what we see in the private sector, right? What we tend to experience in the private sector. And then this kind of the second part of that is how do you avoid I statements, right? So if you could kind of put those together, what was your toughest negotiation? How does that parallel to what people deal with in the private sector? And then how do you avoid I statements when you're negotiating with people?
The hardest job that I did, I wasn't even on the phone for. The hardest job that I was on and managed, I was actually managing the team. Sandy was one of the mouthpieces, primary negotiators on that one. In fact, we had probably had six different negotiators engaging with this guy for almost 20 hours or so. And it was difficult because it was difficult for a couple of reasons. And number one, there was no contact with the guy for the first, God, how many hours was that? For the first almost 12 hours, there was no contact with him. And finally, when the sun came up, we finally were able to make contact with him. But it was tough because of that. It was tough because he was holding his son, who was on the he's on the spectrum. He was a high functioning autistic kid. That made it difficult. And then the negotiation within the negotiation, where I had to negotiate with the powers that be in order to make sure that we were going left instead of right. And so the parallels to corporate negotiations is, you know, ego and authority were prominent in this particular event. Ego got in the way of decision making. It promoted groupthink. It promoted consensus decision making that was taking the event off the rails. We were contemplating an action that flew in the face of what we knew at the time, best practices, and even policy. And so I had to maneuver those conversations in order for them to see what the reality was. And so that the parallel to the corporate world is that you guys run into that all of the time. You guys are running into it all of the time. There's something that needs to be accomplished for the betterment of the organization. You've got people at the C-suite level that are saying, we're going to go right instead of left. How do you manage that difficult conversation? How do you demonstrate for the C-suite that you understand their perspective, that you understand that this is how they view the lay of the land? And so that was my challenge during this event. That's always going to be a challenge for you. And the great thing about it is, whether you're talking law enforcement or you're talking the corporate world, you're talking about human beings. And if you understand that human nature response, you put your head around the fact that negative emotions, negative circumstances drive decision-making and drive behavior. Doesn't matter whether you're in law enforcement or corporate world, you're going to be successful at influencing people into doing what you need them to do. I hope that answered the first part of your question.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
Now, I statements, I need some clarification on what that actually means.
Sure. So, and it's not laid out in the question, but I think it definitely refers back to, you know, we were talking earlier about nonviolent communication and the I statements that are laid out in there that are constructed to put the focus on ourselves so that we can lay out our perspective in a nonviolent way to the other side, right? And I think, you know, a side note for that book, I think what they're missing is a description of tone. That's a big part of executing some of this communication. But we do want to avoid these I statements in general, because when we use I statements, we're focusing the spotlight on us.
Right.
Right. I see it this way for these reasons. Don't you agree? Or don't you want to take my perspective into account? And so I statements like that, I think it's this way. Yeah. For these reasons, how do you avoid doing that?
The bottom line is, you have to understand that listening to another's perspective is the cheapest and most effective concession that you can make to somebody else. And that requires that you defer. That requires that you subordinate yourself. That requires that you understand the true meaning of it's not about me. You are trying to demonstrate for the other side that you, A, recognize their position, and B, you can articulate that recognition. That is the only way that they understand that you are sensitive to their frame of reference. And by throwing eyes in there, to your point, Brandon, you're taking the focus off of the other side and you're putting it back on yourself. And now you've taken that deference and you're flipping it on its head. And now you're putting yourself in a position of superiority over the person. And so it requires a change in your thought process. Understanding that at first 75 to 80% of any difficult conversation is not about you and where you want to end up, your understanding, your vision. It's about the other side. We talk a lot about sequencing. It's always tactical empathy first, your goal and objective last. And so the question is, how do you avoid I statements? Keep top of mind that 75, 80% of the conversation, the first 75, 80% of the conversation, it's about the other side. You should be in pursuit of understanding motivation. It goes back to what Troy talked about earlier, curiosity. We're always looking for the why. We get so wrapped around the axle, and I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but here it goes. We get so wrapped around the axle because somebody made a statement, because somebody conducted themselves in a certain manner, that we fail to understand what's motivating the statement, what motivated that question, what's motivating that behavior. That is where the true value in the conversation is. What is the motivation? Not that they said, I'm not going to sign the contract, but why would they not sign the contract? Catherine threw something into the chat a while ago. It's not the fact that you're getting one-word responses. Why are you getting one-word responses? You throw out a fantastic label and the person says yes. You mirror them and they say no. And that's all they give you. And we get freaked out. Oh my gosh, all they're giving me is one word answers. What am I supposed to do with that? Where does that one word answer come from? They're telling you something in that one word answer. And what it's most likely telling you is, you haven't earned my trust for me to give you anything further than a one word answer. That's where your mindset should be. Focus on what have I done? What have I not done? What am I missing that this person is not being candid with me, is not offering a robust response? And it's usually because you're taking some light away from them and you're focusing it back on yourself. Just a change in mindset. Just like everything else with the Black Swan Group, it's a change in mindset. That's where it starts.
Preach! I'm converted. I'm going to start trying this stuff myself now.
Yeah, exactly. Right. About time. Right? No, but yeah, but that's a great, I mean, that's a great point, Derek. And just to kind of summarize a couple of pieces, like the pursuit of understanding motivation, which is something we cannot reiterate enough times. That's part of how you stay at I statements is what is your intention? If your intention is to not put a lot of effort in and then state what your opinion is, you ain't executing tactical empathy. Right? The intention has to be in a very specific place first. And a lot of it is boiled down to curiosity and the pursuit of underlying motivations. And then the other thing, which is, it's kind of, we're kind of moving in, you know, a little bit past high into re here a little bit. And not everybody that's with us is necessarily ready for that. But to Derek's point about one word answers and addressing the way people respond to us that we don't perceive as positive potentially in the moment, right? One word answers to a mirror or labels. Saying, it seems like I haven't yet earned your trust is never a bad thing to do in the moment. If that's what we're reading, then we gotta know how solid or how thin that ice is that we're standing on. If we're standing on solid ice that says you have not earned my trust and I'm not going to share a effing thing with you and I'm going to be as stoic as possible, then there's something wrong with our approach to them. Maybe you didn't have enough curiosity in your tone when you said the mirror. Maybe it was very downward inflecting and sounded like a confirming yes rather than I would like you to go on more, right? What did you indicate when you said your mirror? You said your mirror? Or you said your mirror? Right? What did it sound like when you delivered it? If it sounded like a simple confirmation, you got a simple yes back. Some of that has to do with our execution. But it seems like I haven't earned your trust. It seems like I'm not in a place where you're willing to share deep-rooted issues with me or challenges. I haven't earned the right to get this from you yet. You don't trust me enough, right? It's never a bad thing to identify that if that's in fact the elephant in the room. So don't shy away from it, right? Step on in, put your head down and run into it, right? That's what you got to do. So I love that. Great ad. Troy, question for you that came up too in regards to getting knocked off your feet to a certain degree, right? So let me pull the question up. I lost my place here. Please forgive me. Okay. This comes from a guy named Brandon, which, love the name. Great name, right? Have you ever been triggered emotionally when negotiating that you've had an emotional response that isn't positive, be it sadness, anger, etc., that now has thrown you off your negotiations because you're worried it's going to happen again? How do you work through that, right? So you talk about mindset all the time. You get triggered. And now you're almost gunshot because you know that you've been triggered and you don't want to allow yourself to react that way in the moment. But now you're thrown off your game because you're so worried about reacting negatively. How do you get through that, man? What do you do?
Yeah, that's such a really good question, because all of us as former negotiators in the law enforcement world, you know, when you sit down in the chair, you don't never know what to expect. And there's that option or chance that may happen. So one of the things is we've tried to prepare before we sit in that seat. We start, you know, making sure we stay curious. We have to accept the fact that at some point we're probably going to get attacked. And if you can ride that out for 45 seconds to a minute, you're going to get past it. One of the most important things that you're going to have to do is you're going to have to vent. Find somebody that you trust. Vent about the things that you know that may come up, especially if they've come up in the past and they haven't been dealt with. You want to be able to vent and get that, get through that, and have a positive session with somebody that you trust, so that you go into the next negotiation in a positive mindset. And if you get triggered while you're actually in the negotiation, label yourself. Take the time to label yourself and help diffuse it for yourself, so that you can get back in the game. Don't let somebody knock you on your behind and then you fall out of the game and feel like you don't have a chance to get back in it. Take that time to take a deep breath. That's why dynamic silence is so important. Say, you know what? He just pissed me off. And label it. It seems like I'm getting pissed about this. You say it enough times to yourself, it's going to diffuse it in you internally, and you're going to jump right back in the game, and you're probably going to knock them off of their game behind that, because that was usually their intention if they do that, is to throw you off your game so that they can have a better chance of winning.
That's perfect, Troy. I don't know if I would necessarily add anything to that, but that's a great point. That's a really great point. All right, very good. So I know we're a little bit after 1 p.m. Eastern here. I have to admit I'm thoroughly enjoying this myself, and so we're obviously here because 5 years ago today, Never Split the Difference hit the bookshelves. And so I figure, you know, we're probably going to be on for another 20 minutes or so, continuing to answer questions. I feel like we haven't gotten to enough questions yet, right? We haven't addressed enough things. And so I want to feed the engine, right? We got people on here that want to learn more. And so we'll get into more of that. And one thing that actually really jumped out at me as I was scrolling through some of this stuff here, and I think this is a great question for you, Professor Voss. How are black swans motivated to tirelessly keep sharing and teaching?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we're hooked on this stuff as a team. It's enjoyable. It's fun. It's entertaining. It's satisfying. You know, if you like helping people have a better life, if you like seeing people happy, then you're a black swan. If you like having a better life yourself, you know, this is about maximizing your life. You want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far, go as a team. You know, and then we discover great ideas as a team. Stuff comes up in our conversations. We socialize together. You know, we put on a black swan event, and the black swans want to get together and, you know, have a bourbon, have a steak, you know, have an adult beverage. We enjoy each other's company because our core values are aligned. We love learning. You know, we're all going to live longer because we're into this. You know, positivity makes you smarter. It's also healthier for you. If you're negative, if you're unhappy, you ain't going to live as long as you could have lived. I mean, there's so many benefits as to why we continue to keep being motivated and working with each other. And not everybody's going to be for you. You know, there are people that have passed through the black swan doors, if you will, that weren't going to be black swans. And we were holding them back. If they're not with us, if they're not meant to be part of our team, want to be on our team, then we're keeping them from people that they should be with. So it's kind of a two-way street. You know, you get around people that enjoy the stuff that you enjoy, and we enjoy each other. We enjoy having a better life. I enjoy having a nicer life. And I enjoy the people I'm around. I'm rambling a little bit, but it's enjoyment, it's curiosity, it's fun, and it's flow. You know, Stephen Kotler, you guys want to know about books, The Rise of Superman and Stealing Fire, two great Stephen Kotler books on flow. When you're in flow, you're tireless. I mean, people do superhuman things when they're in flow. Whatever it is that they're into. The first guy to jump the Great Wall of China on a skateboard did it with a broken ankle because he was in flow. And he jumped it like three times the same day with a broken ankle. Mountain climbers, you know, physical performance, people doing backflips on motorcycles. you know, they're in flow because they're enjoying themselves, and it seems tireless, and life is just that much sweeter.
Yeah, I think that's great. I threw that at you. It's probably the most complicated question we have, all things considered, because there's so many elements that factor into what we do. And I think I'm going out on a limb here, and then I'm probably going to, you know, saying I'm speaking for everybody to a certain degree. We love helping people reach the next level. You know, being part of the journey of someone being a startup business to now negotiating multi-million dollars with companies like Tesla and Farmers Insurance, or, you know, what have you, but just watching, being part of the growth process is just so much fun for us. Giving people tools that they can rely on and that will be there for them when they need them. You know, that's I think that's a huge part of the motivation for me, just helping people get better overall, right? And to a certain degree, slowly changing the communication effort across the world. If we all communicate better, we all know this internally. It's just how the heck do we get there? And that if we all communicate better, everyone's quality of life is going to go up. Everybody's. It's just how do we all communicate better? And so being this very small piece of that effort, you know, is a very cool thing. It's a very, very cool thing.
Would you be opposed to me adding something, Brendan?
Not at all. Not at all. Go ahead, Mr. Smith.
So when I came over here, one of the things I learned about the Black Swan Group and everybody that's on this panel right now is it's become our lifestyle, man. It's what we do. You know, we don't talk about it. We be about it. You know, we live it. I can text or call any one of them anytime, day or night, if I have a question or a concern. And I never once have gotten somebody like, man, you're bothering me. And that's when I realized that being a part of this team was a lifestyle. And you get enjoyment out of it. I followed Brendan. I followed Derek. I followed Sandy. I followed Chris. And anytime I had a question or concern about something, they never once said, here he goes again. They actually stopped and took time to make sure that I got it. And when you get that, when you have that kind of an environment, you understand that people genuinely are living it. They're not telling you to do something that they're not doing, that we're not doing ourselves. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, similar to, you know, we've all been through the process at some point, right, of changing up our diet or our workout plan, or, you know, how we're dealing with ourselves on a daily basis. And, you know, this whole idea of like, this isn't just a diet that you're going on. This is a lifestyle change. I think that relates, you know, this isn't just the piecemeal thing, right? Eat vegetables once a week and you'll be fine. You know, no, if you want to reach peak performance, you want the six pack with the 24 inch pythons, right? And the nice derriere, it's lifestyle change. And to a certain degree, this is a lifestyle change, especially your mental approach to communication with the average person. And that's really where it starts. And so that said, yeah, go ahead.
And our team, just an indicator of how well we get along, we don't just have Democrats and Republicans. We got Giants fans and Cowboys fans that are getting along with each other.
Oh, that's true. That's always tends to spark a bit of a debate internally here. We got Giants and we got Cowboys, and oh, it gets ugly sometimes. That is true. So I got a question I'd love to throw.
I know there's
Derek.
A whole bunch of Cowboys jokes I know is going through your mind right now. So
it's
I
hard.
Congratulate
I'm trying
you
to hold back where I'm gonna take us way off track here on football and sports, right? But to Derek, right, who I tend to refer to as Dr. Gaunt, and as he stated earlier, no, he is not a doctor in the classic sense, right? I like to say that Derek has got a PhD in tactile empathy. And so, right, you need some serious work done on a communication problem, call in the surgeon, and Dr. Gaunt take care of it for you, right? But that said, I got a question about accusations audits, and I know this is near and dear to your heart, man. Question goes, after delivering an accusations audit, there's a strong urge to say, but right? For those of you that have heard me teach, I love the phrase, you never want to put your butt in somebody else's face, right? And so our person is recognizing that, right? There's an urge to say but. However, right, what's a better word to use there in place of but? Or is dynamic silence the only option?
For me, dynamic silence is the only option. You're going to create that space so that you can move on to the next accusations audit, or you're going to create that space so you can pause for effect to see how it landed. Your drive to explain has got to be tamped down. And it's hard because, first of all, out of all of the skills in the skill set, all of our skills are counterintuitive. This perhaps is the most counterintuitive because you're taking the negative light and you're pointing it back at yourself. And because you're doing that, it makes you uncomfortable. And because you're uncomfortable, you want to get comfortable again as quickly as possible. And that's where your drive for the but and or because comes in. You will have an opportunity later in the conversation to explain to them why their accusations are, the accusations audits were inaccurate, but it's just not at the time that you deliver them. The delivering of the accusations audit is your first salvo. It's the first shot fired towards the other side to show them, I get where you're coming from. I get this is your perspective. I get this is what you're probably thinking about me. This is what you're probably thinking about this circumstance. This is probably what you're thinking about my company or whoever I represent. Then this is what you think about the environment. And so resist the urge to but and or because them between each one. Later in the conversation, when you start to throw out your data and your information, when you start to draw your line in the sand, make your pitch, make your ask, that's going to be the time where you provide the information that says, all of those accusations audits that I threw out at the beginning, here's why you don't need to worry about them. It's just not at the right, at the time that you actually throw them out. Be patient.
Yeah, I love that. Be patient, I think, is probably the key part of what you said there, which that is not a virtue that I exhibit naturally, right? I'm very willing to admit that. To your point, though, Derek, when we're trying to butt or however, especially with an accusations audit, it's because we're trying to segue into something else. And the problem with that is the accusations audit has a very specific focus. It's designed to solve a very specific problem, namely diffusion of negatives that are going to get in the way of them making a deal with you. I don't trust you, and you expect me to give you $10 million, and you can't even bring yourself to say that you've noticed I don't trust you, because I'm giving you one word answers every time you mirror me. I'm giving you really short, curt responses when you ask calibrated questions. Clearly, I don't trust you. And you got the audacity to ask me for $10 million when I'm indicating with every ounce of my being that there is no trust from me to you. Now, if you diffuse it at the beginning, I imagine you probably don't trust us. I imagine you got good reason for feeling that way. I know that you're going to be hesitant about sharing deep-rooted motivations with us. But you shouldn't feel that way because we're really trustworthy and we've been doing this a long time and we got a good feel for what you've now completely changed the focus. Our focus is on them and we get you. We know you so well that you don't even have to talk to us for us to explain to you that you got trust issues. And that because we're just coming in out of left field, you ain't going to share that stuff with us. And we're going to leave it at that. We're going to let you digest it. And we're not going to try to divert your thinking by saying, well, here's why you shouldn't feel that way.
Right.
And that's what but starts to do. The other thing is our counterparts somewhat feel it. As we're laying out an accusations audit, the reality is in the back of their mind, they're thinking, okay, at some point you're going to say, but, and you're going to explain to me why all the things I feel that you think I feel are invalid. And when we don't transition, it's a breath of fresh air for them. And so play to the strength. And go ahead, Professor.
Yeah, and you when you don't transition in that breath of fresh air that Brandon was just talking about, there are significant number of times a deal is going to make itself. Now, it doesn't matter what that percentage is. You know, my guess, it's no less than 30% of the time. It's probably higher than that. But let's say it's just 1% of the time. Let the deal make itself. That saves a whole bunch of your effort on the things that actually require your effort. So let it come to you. And after that accusation is uttered, in that moment of dynamic silence, let it come to you if it will. There's no downside to that. There's nothing but upside, and the upside percentage is certainly worth letting it happen.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Now, that's a great point. All right, so we've gotten way into this, right? We're already 80 minutes in, and so we'll kind of wrap up here in the next 10 minutes. And there's a great question that came in that I'd kind of like for all of us to touch on as we finish up here. So, again, happy five-year anniversary. You're doing something else this evening, right? 6 p.m. West Coast time, is that correct?
Yeah, 6 p.m. Pacific time. We're going to jump on Clubhouse. Those of you that are on Clubhouse, it should be a fun conversation. There's a fair chance that since it's after 5 my time, you know, I may be sipping on a little bit of Four Roses, the unofficial bourbon of the Black Swan Group. But yeah, we're gonna get on Clubhouse and you know, have an open conversation, do some Q&A, have some fun, tell a couple jokes. Continue to put tactical empathy into the world on unofficial International Tactical Empathy Day. Let's move the world out today.
That's right. And so, and I saw a question came up, like, where do you find out about more of our courses? So if you haven't been to our website, it's just simply Black Swan LTD, like limited.com. And under training for individuals and corporations, you can find our list of topics there. Troy is teaching stuff about mindset in a class that will be outlined this CAVIAR acronym that actually Derek Gaunt created that talks about how to get into mindset. Starts with curiosity, hence the C, which is why I've been so focused there for obvious reasons. Derek has been teaching forever. He's doing advanced courses and he's doing trainings with corporations and he's doing success coaching with individuals. And so here's things he's doing. Sandy, if you have missed it, she's doing several things, but the ones I'm most excited about is she's gearing specific content for our female base, right? The women that are out there that are trying to figure out how to be better women in the workplace and at home. Sandy's developing courses around that. We got the Women's Power Hour going on right now. And in a few short weeks, we're going to have a more advanced women's course that Sandy's also going to be teaching. And then I do a number of things as well, but you can find it all on our website. And our blog comes out every Tuesday. It's free. It's also got information in there you can find. So if you're looking for stuff, there's two ways to do it.
I had a question for Brandon Voss.
Okay, question from Brandon Voss. All right, what do we got?
All right, so... Yeah, a lot of people don't know you're the glue that holds the company together. There are other FBI hostage negotiators that nobody can name because Brandon Voss is the glue that holds together Black Swan Group so that we can be Black Swans. So in your application of the negotiation skills internally in the company, You got a perspective that nobody else has. What are some of your thoughts on that?
General thoughts. I'm glad I got the tools. I'm glad I got the skill set because the conversations internally are much easier and much more collaborative because we're both coming from a place of tactical empathy. So, and to a certain degree, I'd say it makes my job easier because everyone internally is so familiar with the skills and the skills are designed to invite collaboration. Every internal conversation I have ends up being highly collaborative. And so I'd say that's probably the biggest piece of it. I think the other thing that's interesting, based on my position in the company, and then people like Sandy and Troy and Derek, as you can probably tell, they're older than I am. Not a whole lot older, right? It ain't like this huge generational gap. But the reality is, right, they're older than I am. And then, you know, there's always this thing of like, all right, who's this? I personally always worry about, like, who's this stupid kid, right, that's going to tell me how to do this or explain to me how to walk through this. And this goes really with almost any business professional I run into. And, you know, to the credit of those on the team, it's the age is just a number, right? And we're all in the same team. We all got the same effort. We're all rowing in the same direction. I think if I was rowing in the wrong direction, it would definitely be like, ah, this stupid kid, what are you doing? But it's very much we all got the same effort going forward. And tactical empathy, I think, is the centerpiece to a lot of that and to a lot of what I've done in my past. Most of you don't know, I started my first business when I was 14, had five employees and was making way more money than any 14-year-old should make. I mean, week to week, I was easily banking somewhere between $4,000 and $7,000 a week doing that business with five employees, right? Tactical empathy was a centerpiece of how we made all that come together. And so it all comes back to that, right? I can always draw any success or anything that I'm really proud of. I can probably draw it back to a communication effort of some sort. And that's something that we all want to create for everyone we come in contact with. Being able to draw every major success back to a flawless communication effort. And so kind of with that said, you know, a question I would love everybody to touch on really briefly as we wrap up here, and this comes from Anna Maria. You know, what's the most emotionally rewarding experience you've lived in the last 5 years? And this is really addressed to the entire team. For me, there's so many, and since I'm talking, I'll just go ahead, go first, and then Troy, you'll go next, and we'll wrap up with the professor at the end here. This is going to sound like self-marketing, a shameless self-plug for myself. When I was 26 years old and started coaching a lot more heavily on behalf of Black Swan, I won't name the industry or the people involved, coached a guy through a merger. He was buying another company and saved him $32 million on that purchase. And at the age of 26, coaching this stuff, right, that was solidification of a lot of things. But what's interesting is looking back on it, the thing, I love it and I kind of regret. We saved so much money so fast. I told him that they'd settle after we got him down $35 million. And he saved so much money so fast in the communication. He settled at 32 because he was scared that they wouldn't come all the way down to the 35, even though all the indicators said that they would. Right? We started at 200 million. We settled at 168. The advice was they're going to come down to 165. Right? Over the course of this week, they're going to move three times. They'll come all the way down to 165 million from 200. And when he got them close to just 170, he went into classic bargaining and got him to settle at 168. And to this day, I'm still a little upset by that because it's like, you'd got $3 more million out of him, right? If you'd have just stuck to the process, you didn't get so nervous. But that's one of the things that really stands out to me personally. I very rewarding and solidified me as a coach for a lot of reasons. And, you know, when you save somebody, you know, 30, 40 million bucks, they tend to come back. So that was a big one for me. Troy, I'll let you go next. Sandy, Derek, and then we'll wrap up with Professor Walsh.
Well, that is a great question. I have to say something that just happened yesterday. Law enforcement in San Antonio and the community didn't have a really good relationship. And a friend of mine called me and asked me if I would sit in on this talk they were going to have, and it was live streamed. And through tactical empathy, both sides walked out of there shaking hands, hugging each other, when the community had no intention of letting the police off the hook, and the police had no intention of answering any questions. And when we got finished, one of the women in there and the vice president of the union walked out holding the conversation, agreeing to get back together. And I realized the skills that we use and that we bring to the table have such an impact, not just on us in the business world, but in our everyday lives. And I've realized that right now, I think that's going to make a big difference for how the community and how police officers start to work back together again. So that was mine.
Yeah, it's a great one. And for those of you that don't know, Troy does a lot of work bringing community and law enforcement officers together to create collaboration, and he's very good at it. Sandy, what about you?
I enjoy using the skills on a personal level. I'm really finding that I love working with coaching clients, and I'm not doing the big, huge million-dollar deals yet. I've done a few high-dollar deals, but what I really love the most is working with a coaching client and helping them understand tactical empathy and hearing at the next session that we have how they used it to deal with their kids or their wife, or how it's just overall making their lives better. So that's something that I really have gotten out of it since I've been with the Black Swan Group. After I left the police department, before I came full time with Black Swan, I was a high school teacher for 6 years, which is a whole other thing. But I taught criminal justice in the local high school, which is a pretty disadvantaged high school. And they had a lot of problems there with behavior and with students there who didn't get along with local law enforcement. So I went in there and taught them these tactical empathy skills and used it as part of a lesson in hostage negotiation lesson, because that sounds really interesting, and taught them these skills and led these kids. And I just found out that the group that I just worked with just won the state championship for the third time 2 weeks ago. They won again, so they're three-time state champions. That's the last kids that I'll have influence over, because you know, I turned it over to someone else, so that the seniors that went this year were my kids. And so they just won the third time in a row. But seeing these kids, a lot of them becoming police officers and going to work in law enforcement when they hated the police when I first started there, they thought they were just awful. So it was fostering that relationship between the youngsters in the community and the law enforcement in the community, and kind of changing the way they looked at that. That's probably, and using these skills, because these kids don't get this stuff at home. And so when you teach them these skills and how they can navigate by using them, it makes a difference. And so that's what's been the most rewarding for me.
Doctor?
Emotionally rewarding experience in the last 5 years. I would have to say it's probably the hit that we did. I think it was in Dallas. And one of the participants in that live event came up to us on a break. May have been at the end of the day. I can't remember. But she had participated in the live event in New York City. She found out we were doing it in Dallas. She got on a plane in New Hampshire and flew to Dallas just to tell us in a very emotional way how what we were providing has changed her life, not only professionally, but personally. And she actually broke down as she was relaying that to us. And for as an instructor, you're always wondering, do they get it? And this was unequivocal. This was a prime example of somebody who got it, understood it, the value in it and the potency of it, and applied it to not only her professional but her personal life, to the point where her gratitude was such that she got on a plane in New Hampshire to fly to Dallas to thank us in person for changing her life. I will never forget that.
Yeah, very good. That's powerful, man. And Professor, final words, thoughts, most emotionally rewarding experience in the last few years?
Yeah, you know, what's hard about that question is, you know, we're getting this, I'm torn between, in general terms, the fact that like the people that get on our team, that become Black Swans, the people that are part of the Black Swan group, man, I'm seeing people that are genuinely happy and having better lives and bringing stuff into their lives that they, you know, they didn't really see post-law enforcement, or they didn't see at all. Like Davey talking about, she didn't think this was a real job, and she's having the best time of her life. So the satisfaction between thinking that I had some role to play in the people on this team, being part of this team and having better lives, is just, to me, I could quit at that point. Because then this team is going to turns right around, and part of their satisfaction is the stuff that Derek just talked about, making somebody else's life better, or that Troy's talking about, you know, between our coaching clients and still making the community better. And Sandy's talking about, you know, she says she's not influenced on those high school kids anymore. Yes, she is. She's given them another example of how to turn around and succeed in the business world. And seeing you and the phenomenal life that you've built, Brandon. You got a great house. You got a great family. You're in a great community. And you're going to continue to move this stuff forward. So as enjoyable as it is, and there's no shortage of stories from clients who said, "You guys have changed my life." You know, it's the people on this team that I'm part of it.
That's great stuff. That's great stuff. So, first of all, happy 5-year anniversary. Here we are. As a reminder, we got a Reddit AMA going on at 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 Central, 2 Pacific, and then the Clubhouse with Chris Q&A. You might be drinking a little Four Roses bourbon. That's at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 6 Pacific. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for being part of our anniversary celebration. We hope you join us for other pieces going on throughout the day. Other than that, appreciate your questions, and go out there and keep killing it. Keep crushing. Thank you.